And very well-known speakers join us is a great gift. And the setup is that the first program will be Rabbi Ronan Neuwirth, and Asher Karin will introduce him momentarily. I just want to take a moment to thank some of the people who are responsible for being able to pull all of this off, and I apologize in advance that I may have forgotten a name or two, so please on this day of Rosh Chodesh forgive me for those who I've forgotten. On the local front, Gwen Horowitz, Rabbi Yehuda Seif, Yoni Bentheim, Tal Weinberger, Orit Seif, the folks at Sohar, our local sponsors, Yeshiva University, Torah Academy, the Kohelet Organization, the Kohelet Foundation, and Bnei Akiva. If you haven't seen the flyer downstairs, by the way, there's a whole month of programming that's really connected to this Geula season. I encourage you to take a look at that flyer. We have a really wonderful series of programs, and a lot of thanks are due to the Karens, really, for their hard work in putting it together. Please take a look to see a slew of people that are coming. This morning's program is being sponsored not only by Bnei Akiva Laura Marion, but by Tammy Peskin, in memory of her mother, Lola Suska and Leah Bas Moshe V'chana. The neshama should have an Eloi and should be a source of merit for her, for our community, and for all of Klal Yisrael. Before I turn the mic over to Asher, my apologies to our speaker that unfortunately, due to other obligations, I'm going to have to leave in the middle. It is not a reflection of our speaker or anything that he is saying. So without further ado, it's a pleasure to call upon Asher Karin to formally introduce Rabbi Neuwirth.
I think the best way to introduce Rav Neuwirth and his wife is through their work in the Tzohar Rabbinical Council in Israel. When Hashem tells Noach to build the Teiva, so he says to him, Tzohar ta'aseh la'teiva. And Rashi quotes the Midrash, which gives two explanations to what this Tzohar is. One explanation is Tzohar is a window, as we use in modern day Hebrew. Second one is Tzohar is this Even Tova, this special stone which gave light in the Teiva. The Tzohar organization in Israel, what they do is they try to approach those Jews who haven't yet seen the light of the Torah and the Olam HaMitzvot, and they try to open a window, a Tzohar for them, in order for them to see the light in the Torah. I think the same thing could be said about Rav Neuwirth's previous position as the head rabbi of Bnei Akiva in North America, where I think we can see the same ideas, coming to North America in order to open a window and show the light of Eretz Yisrael to the Jews in North America. It's an honor to have the Rav Neuwirth opening our Chodesh Iyar learning program, in which we hope as well to open a window to Torah Eretz Yisrael, so we can all share and get a feeling from the special light of this special Torah which comes from Eretz Yisrael, as it says, Ki mitzion tetzeh Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Bevakasha.
Thank you very much. Boker Tov, good morning. First of all, it's a great zchut and pleasure for me to be here. Last time I was here, I think it was like maybe 7 or 8 years ago, in the times of my shlichut Bnei Akiva. And in fact, one of my dreams, and I think Becky remembers, was to try to bring Shlichim of Bnei Akiva here to Philadelphia to go Marion. So it's a pleasure and nacha to see that we have Shlichim, so talented Shlichim, in touch with Asher and Miriam. And I want to thank you for putting the program together. I want to thank Rabbi Seif, was in touch with, to thank Rabbi Schmidman for hosting the event and for the warm welcoming. We have in our kila in Ranana many olim also from here. We have most of the kila of our kila is kila of olim. Every summer we get about 30 new families coming to Aliyah and joining the shul. By the way, we still have some open slots for the coming summer if anybody is planning. But I'm also getting feedback from you're from a congregation or live in our kilah, and it's bemet a zchut to be here and to make it kind of a closure. So, with that, Boker Tov. I just spoke about kilah members, so. Further ado, and Birshut Arav, I wish to share with you something which I think is crucial to think about before Yom Ha'atzmaut. We know every year we have Rosh Hashanah, and Rosh Hashanah for us is a time of Cheshbon Nefesh. It's a time to rethink, to try to examine our ways, deeds, actions, to make a plan for the next year, make repentance, to think about the future. In a private sense, in sense of my life, life of my family. In a sense, Yom Ha'atzmaut, we have a great zchut in our times to have Yom Ha'atzmaut as part of the Jewish calendar. It's also time for cheshbon nefesh. Not a private cheshbon nefesh, rather a cheshbon nefesh for our nation. Where are we holding? The rabbi mentioned the times of redemption. Where are we holding with the redemption, with our nation, with the state of Israel? It's time for cheshbon nefesh, and this is what I want to try to do today, with what we will try to learn about the essence, the spiritual essence of Yom Ha'atzmaut. It's very interesting, because we are... Rabbi spoke about times of redemption, we are also in times of Sfirat HaOmer. And immediately, instinctively, when we speak about Sfirat HaOmer, we think about time of mourning. It's a time period of mourning or avelut, that's why we don't shave, we don't do this and that. But in our times, again, we have the zchut that Sfirat HaOmer is not just a time of mourning, it's also a very special time of happiness. And in a sense, maybe it's implied in the following Midrash, which appears in source number 1. Let's read the Midrash together. Umeize zchut zachu Yisrael liirash haaretz? What is the zchut, what is the merit in which Yisrael were able to inherit the land of Israel? Eve omer bizchut mitzvah ta'omer, in the merit of the mitzvah of the Omer. The mitzvah of the Omer is what gave us the power to inherit the land of Israel. Lefichach Moshe mazirit Yisrael v'omer lehem ki tavor al haaretz v'kutzartem et tzirah v'avetem et omer. When you'll enter the land, you should bring the Omer. The introduction to the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer is Ki Tavou El Haaretz. Says the Midrash, there is a connection between Sfirat HaOmer and the land of Israel. So maybe, surely, it's not random that the Chagim, the new Chagim that we have, Yom Ha'atzmaut and also Yom Yerushalayim, both fall out during Sfirat HaOmer. So let's try to think and to learn what is the essence of the Omer, of Sfirat HaOmer. The original sense of the Torah, because obviously in the Torah, it's a kind of a long Chol HaMoed between Pesach and Shavuot. There's no context of mourning or sadness. It's definitely happy time. So let's start to learn the Psukim in the Torah. As you probably know, there was a major dispute in Am Yisrael between the mainstream sages, the Pushim, and one of the sects, the Baitosi and the Baitosians, about Sfirat HaOmer, how to handle Sfirat HaOmer, how to count Sfirat HaOmer. The opinion of mainstream rabbis, that's the opinion which we are holding for, that when the Torah says Mimochorat HaShabbat is the day after Pesach, right? Shabbat is Pesach. According to the Baitosim, Mimochorat HaShabbat is the day after Shabbat, clearly, which is Sunday. Machloket, what's the big deal? We'll see that there was a very big deal around this Machloket. By the way, if you read the Psukim, apparently the Baitusim were actually right. Because the Torah doesn't say it only once, Mimochat HaShabbat. The Torah repeats it three times. Let's read the Psukim together. Source number two. דבר בני ישראל ואמרת להם כי תבואו לארץ אשר אני נותן לכם קצירה ואתם את עומר. As what we mentioned, the commandment of the Omer, of the offering of the Omer. ממוחרת השבת היא נפנוק, and it's supposed to take place ממוחרת השבת. Fine. ממוחרת השבת, let's say it's Pesach. Let's continue. ספרתם לכם, once again, the Torah says ממוחרת השבת. יום אביכם את עומר תנופה. שבע שבתות תמימות. What is Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot? In that context, what is Shabbat? A week, Shavua. Tamim is whole. Shalem. 7 whole weeks. What is a whole week? What is Shavua Tamim? From Sunday till Shabbat. Ad Mimochorat HaShabbat HaShvi'it. Till the day after the 7th Shabbat, which is Sunday. It's so pashut that the Baitusim interpreted the Torah in the right way. Mochat HaShabbat is Sunday. Well, so, we know there are machlokot. Chachamim had the authority to be darshing. Fine. But there was one major, even surprising ramification to this machloket. And this appears in the Mishnah in Masechet Menachot. Let's see the Mishnah in source number three. The Mishnah is describing the way that the ceremony of the offering of the Omer was done. Kitzad ayusim, how did they handle, conduct the ceremony? So the messengers of Beit Din went out before Yom Tov, because when did it take place? It took place immediately after Yom Tov, right? Here it's second Yom Tov. In Israel it's the first day of Chol HaMoed. That's the time that it took place, the offering of the Omer. So the messengers went out before Yom Tov in order to prepare all the bunches of corn of the Omer and to tie them up together to make it easier to reap. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Let's read it quickly. ועושים אותם קריחות, bundles, במחובה על הקרקע, כדי שיהיה נוח לקצור. In order to make it easier to rip. בכל העיירות, in מוצאי חג, all the nearby towns were gathering. It was a big ceremony, כדי שיהיה נקצר בעסק גדול. It was a big deal, עסק גדול, or something big. כיוון שחשכה, when the sun set, and it was time, like it's Motzei Chag, it's time to start with the ceremony. Omer lehem ba'ashemesh, the conductor of the ceremony is asking ba'ashemesh, did the sun set? They told him yes. Three times, yes. Then he asked Magaza, should I use the sickle? They're telling him yes. Can hen? Three times, yes on everything. Then, I'm skipping two lines. Be'Shabbat, אומר להם שבת זו אומרים הן. If it took place on Shabbat, he was asking them, hold a second, it's Shabbat, should I reap? And they're telling him yes. Should I reap? Yes. Three times. And why? הם אומרים לו קצור שלוש פעמים כל דבר ודבר. They're telling him three times on each question. On why? מפני הביתוסים, because of the ביתוסים, שיומרים אין קצירת עומר במוצאי יום טוב. This is something I really don't understand. By the way, today in our times it can never happen. Why? Because after the calendar, Jewish calendar was set, one of the principles is לא עדו ראש ולא בדו פסח. פסח can never fall out on Friday. But in the times of the Mishnah, when they did Kiddush HaChodesh, so sometimes it happened that Pesach took place on Friday. So when is Mimochrat HaShabbat? Mochrat HaShabbat falls out on Shabbat. So all this mass public Chilul Shabbat was done under the hechsher of all the rabbanim. Why? Just to prove that they are right, as opposed to the baitosim. It's outrageous. How come? And again, we saw that according to the Torah, that what is a pshat, what is mochata Shabbat? Sunday. According to the baitosim, it will never happen because they always will reap on Sunday. So how come our sages, the mainstream sages, supported such a big Chilul Shabbat? This is in fact not my question, it's a question for Rav Kook. Rav Kook is dealing with this question in Ma'amrei Ariya. He wrote a beautiful essay that maybe explains what is standing behind the dispute, behind the machloket. Let's read it together in the words, in these inspiring and uplifting words of Rav Kook. I'll obviously translate. Source number 5. Says Rav Kook, it wasn't just a halachic dispute. It was a dispute about the essence of life in the land of Israel. Hachaklaut, source number 5, the agriculture. Alo yetzel kol ha'amim ragorem kalkali chiyuni pashut. In each and every nation, chaklaut, agriculture, belongs to the secular world. That's got nothing to do with holiness. Aval ha'am, our nation, asher hanoseh shelo kulo kodesh kodeshim, the theme of Am Yisrael is kodesh kodeshim. This, by the way, a brilliant explanation for Kook. What is Kodesh Kodeshim? How to define Kodesh Kodeshim? It's very easy how to define Kodesh. Every child knows what Kodesh is. Mezuzah is Kodesh, Tefillin is Kodesh, Seder is Kodesh. We also know what is Chol. It's very easy to distinguish between Kodesh and Chol. You do it every day, every Motzei Shabbat. What is Kodesh Kodeshim? Says Rav Kook, I'm skipping for a second to source number 4. There's a world of secular and the world of holy, world of secularity and world of holiness. These worlds contradict each other. Obviously, the contradiction between them is relative. Contradiction between Kodesh and Chol is just relative, it's just in our minds. Man, in his limited comprehension, is unable to harmonize secularity and holiness, and is unable to neutralize the contradictions. They are, however, reconciled in the higher world, in the place of Kodesh Kodeshim, the Holy of Holies. Kodesh Kodeshim, it's a place where there's no contradiction whatsoever between the world of mundane to the world of holiness. I can give you plenty of examples, but just 2 of them very briefly. Shir HaShirim. Rabbi Akiva claims that all the scriptures are Kodesh. Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodeshim. Why? Because what is the method of Shir HaShirim? To teach us about being in love with God by a love story. Taking the world of mundane and connecting it directly to the world of holiness, to the essence of holiness. This is Kodesh Kodeshim. I'll give you another example. Who's the only person who was entitled to enter Kodesh Kodeshim? Kohen Gadol. He was the only person who was entitled to enter Kodesh Kodeshim. Let's assume that today, let's hope, we hear in the news that Mashiach is on his way, Bet Midrash is about to be rebuilt, and we need to recruit a new Kohen Gadol. And we need to put together a job description for the Kohen Gadol. What will we write in the job description? What are we looking for? He has to be Kohen for sure. He has to be probably Tzadik, Yirei Shamayim, humble. Perfect. But Chazal are counting 3 more mandatory traits. According to Chazal, he has to be gadol mechav banoi ba'osher ba'koach. He has to be the most good-looking Kohen, the wealthiest Kohen, and the strongest Kohen. Why? We're looking for a movie star, for a Kohen Gadol. Why does he need all these qualities? In behalf of Tzohar, I was involved for many years in training and placing Rabbanei Kehilot in Israel. I can tell you for sure, I dealt with plenty of job descriptions. I never saw one kehila that demanded that the rabbi should be good looking. Baruch Hashem, you have a good looking rabbi.
Good try.
Sorry. But how come this is part of the job description of Kohen Gadol? The answer is very simple, because he's supposed to enter Kodesh Kodeshim. Is in his external appearance is a reflection of his inner neshama. It's not a contradiction between the inside and the outside. This is Kodesh Kodeshim. Says Rav Kook, the theme of our nation is Kodesh Kodeshim. In Am Yisrael, even chaklau, the agriculture, can be something of holiness. Where? In the land of Israel. Let's continue. Arei gam chaklauto kula sugat kodesh. The chaklaut, the agriculture, is filled with holiness. The kodesh hazeh shebayisod hachaklaim uvlatu al yedei shechagigat rishit hakatzir haomer ulai lemadrigat avodat hakodesh hayoter elyonah. Says Rav Kook, how can we emphasize that even agriculture and the secular values in Am Yisrael can be uplifted to a level of holiness by the celebration of the Omer? What was the celebration of the Omer? Rav Kook is giving a brilliant explanation. In Beit Mikdash, every Shabbat there was a Chilul Shabbat. Why? The Korbanot. What is a Korban? It's one of the 39 Melachot Netilat Neshama, killing a living soul. It's a problem. It can be a bull, it can be a sheep, it can be a fly. Every living soul that you are killing is one of the Lametet Melachot. And every Shabbat, we had Korbanot. But it is permitted, and why? Very simple. Very simple formula. Something which is Korban Tzibur, public offering, is overriding Shabbat. So obviously, Korban Yechid, private offering, cannot be Doche Shabbat. But Korban Tzibur, public offering, is being Doche Shabbat, is overriding Shabbat, and therefore there are Korbanot in Beit Mikdash, there's no problem. We know there are a couple of things which are Doche Shabbat. Pikuach Nefesh, life danger, is also overriding Shabbat. So this is one of the things which are overriding Shabbat, Korban Tzibur. Perfect. Says Rav Kook, this is exactly the idea. This was a korban, an offering, the Omer, which was overriding Shabbat. Why? Because this is a korban tzibur. Says Rav Kook, this is the message that in the land of Israel, even work and life of mundane are part of a system of holiness. So obviously, a private farmer cannot plow and cannot reap on Shabbat. That's for sure. But if you do something in behalf of the nation, because the Korban of the Omer was permitting the Chadash, new produce in the Medina, in the states, in the land. That's why it was uplifted to a level of Korban. Says Rav Kook, I'm skipping to the third paragraph, source number 5. Habaitosim lo yechlu litamek b'sgulat Yisrael. They did not have the ability to see the profoundness of this Jewish faith. That in the land of Israel, this is also part of the system of holiness. Ladat et omek hakodesh asher lagoy hakadosh hazeh. the essence of the holiness of Am Yisrael. When we are dwelling on the land of on our homeland, land of Israel, gam chaklauto v'inyan atzmo, the agriculture and building the country and having economical systems and police and army, it's all part of the system of a Kodesh. They did not realize that. For them, serving in the army, it's not Kodesh. They perceive that what is Kodesh, Shabbos is Kodesh, Kashrut is Kodesh. But the state? No way. That was the dispute between the Baitosim and the Purshim. The holiness of a state. גם חקלאותו ונעצו בכל תוצאותי המעשיות והקרקעיות, with all the practical implications, תוכן קודש, there's content of קודש for them. זאת לא יכלה בית ישראל, they could not digest this depth of Judaism. על כן רצה להכיל אותו, להביא שאין צירת המדוחת השבת, says Rav Kook, this is the source of the dispute. In other words, moving to Israel is shifting from a status of a community to the status of a state. The Baitosim, they saw only their private sector, their community, they did not see anything beyond. So for them, what is Torah? It's Shabbat, it's Kashrut, that's what they saw. That's why they could not realize that even agriculture at one point can be overriding Shabbat. They did not see the big picture. The Purshim, the mainstream rabbis, they were able to see the big picture. It's part of life in Israel. It's not just thinking about the future of myself, of my family, of my community. It's about the future of the nation. This is the dispute. And therefore, because it was a Korban Tzibur, it's an public offering, it was overriding Shabbat. This is the essence of the Torah of the land of Israel. By the way, there's a machloket appears in the Gemara in source number 6. I won't read it inside, I'll just mention this by heart. There's a machloket between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai on how should one practice Judaism. There's a contradiction between two psukim. One pasuk says, Ve'asavta deganecha, you should gather your corn, that's what we say every day, twice a day. Kriyat Shema. The other pasuk says, Lo yamush sefer haTorah ze mipicha, this book of Torah should never depart of your mouth. You should learn Torah 24/7. It's a contradiction. How can we reconcile the contradiction? Says Rabbi Ishmael, no problem. Anek be minag der heretz. Don't understand the pasuk literally. The pasuk doesn't mean that you need to learn Torah 24/7. Take the Torah with you 24/7 when you go to work, when you go to gather your corn, when you drive. Everything you do, the Torah is with you. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai objected and he says, if somebody will reap in reaping season and sow in sowing season and do this and that, who will learn Torah? So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai perceived this as a curse. That whoever needs to go to work is a curse, and in times, in the good times, others will do the work for us and we can just sit in the Torah. The Gemara, by the way, concludes by the conclusion of Abaye. Arbe isuki Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai velo alta biadam. Many tried to follow the way of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai just to learn Torah. They did not succeed. The reason why I'm bringing this is because a very interesting Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer was one of the founders of the ultra-Orthodox Shita system. And he writes something amazing. Let's read it together in source number 7. It seems to me that Rabbi Ishmael meant this approach is only applicable in Eretz Israel, and only at a time when the majority of Am Yisrael dwells in Eretz Israel, says Chatam Sofer amazingly. Rabbi Ishmael, who says that one should integrate and do Torah v'avodah, go to work and take the Torah with him, he related to Eretz Israel and the majority of the people of Israel living there. We'll speak about the majority in a second. This is so because in Eretz Israel, the physical work of the land itself is a mitzvah of settling the land of Israel. And just like one cannot say, I'm not put on feeling because I'm occupied with the Torah, one should not say, I'll not harvest the crop because I'm occupied with the Torah. It's an amazing claim of argument of Chatam Sofer. One cannot say, today I'm not putting on feeling, I don't have time, I need to learn Torah. So what? You have a mitzvah to learn Torah, you have a mitzvah to put on feeling, do both. Says Chatam Sofer, when you are living in the land of Israel, there's no way that one says, I want just to learn Torah. You have a mitzvah, a very important mitzvah to learn Torah, but you have also mitzvah, ve'asavta deganecha, go to work. You need to do both. It's part of the mitzvah of settling the land. This is exactly the dispute about the essence of life in Israel. Between the Baitusim and the Prushim, as Rav Kook said. Chatam Sofer continues. Furthermore, even other occupations and trades that build society are all part of the mitzvah of settling the land of Israel. Not just agriculture, every profession which builds the land. Again, as Rav Kook explained before. But, unfortunately, when we are still scattered amongst the nations in the diaspora, says the Chatam Sofer, due to our transgressions, Rabbi Ishmael also agrees with the approach of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And this is why, says Chatam Sofer, in Chutz Laaretz we are counting on the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and learning just Torah. It's just in Chutz Laaretz, because we are still not in our proper place in the land of Israel. It's clear that is not the way. This is what the Chatam Sofer is saying. This is the essence of entering the land. By the way, we spoke about Sfirat HaOmer. We now start to realize what is the spiritual essence of Sfirat HaOmer, of moving, doing this transition and entering the land, entering a new mindset of realizing what is a nation, what is the holiness of a nation, not just of a community. There's an amazing Zohar which I brought in source number 9. I'll say it by heart. The Zohar is asking a question. On Pesach we conducted a fight against the Chametz. We had a battle against each and every crumb of Chametz, as you probably remember. Because of the holiness of the matzah. He says the Chatam Sofer, says the Zohar, all of a sudden, we are being uplifted, taking up step by step on each day of Sfirat HaOmer. And we are reaching the pinnacle, the climax on Shavuot. And what happens on Shavuot? In the times of Bet Mikdash, what was the offering of Shavuot? Anyone remembers? Korban Shtei Alechem, the offering of 2 loaves of bread, which is supposed to be made of Chametz. Solet Tiena Chametz Teafena. This is the only public offering which is made of Chametz. Asks the Zohar, how come? We had such a battle against the Chametz because the Chametz symbolizes the mundane, the secularity, the things which are not related to the Torah. How come Now on Shavuot, when you reach the pinnacle, you bring this offering to the altar, to the Mizbeach. And the Zohar gives a mashal, allegory, to a child who got ill. During his illness, the doctors told his father, don't give him any snacks, any junk food, only healthy food. When he got better, when he recovered, then the doctors told him, now you can feed him whatever he wishes, he likes, because now he's well. Nothing will harm him. Says the Zohar, this is exactly what happened with us. When we left Egypt, we were still in a lower level. The only way to deal with holiness was by keeping aside everything which is not directly connected to holiness. All the chametz, all the world of mundane should be aside. But if we want to reach the highest level, the highest madrega, we need to find back the way to the chametz, to be able to uplift the chametz. Not to be scared from the chametz, not to be scared from life of mundane, from secular values, from modern values of life. This is part of this transition from Pesach to Shavuot, from condition of defense to a status of victory over the chametz. In a sense, this is exactly symbolizing the transition between 2,000 years of exile to life of redemption in the land of Israel. There's a Gemara which I brought in source number 8. אמר בחייה משמד אולם יום שחרב בית המקדש אין לו לקדוש ברוך הוא לדלי אדמות של ההלכה. Ever since בית מקדש was destroyed, the world of Torah got limited in 4 cubits of halacha. For 2,000 years, what kept us alive was the fact that we escaped from everything which is not Jewish, which is not connected directly to holiness, to the Beit Midrash, to the Shtetl. That what kept us together. That what kept Judaism alive. That was the status for 2,000 years. That was Pesach. Pesach is the Torah of the Galut, of the exile, of the diaspora. Shavuot is the transition. Let's see it in the words of Rav Kook, source number 10. Says Rav Kook, the Judaism of the past, from Egypt till now, is a long battle against nature, against the ugly side of nature, that of general humanity, even that of individuals and the entire nations. We have done battle with nature in order to prevail over it and bring it down into its place. That's the Judaism of the past, of 2,000 years of exile. That is Pesach. That is one step. But now, says Rav Kook, something is changing in the world. This is part of redemption, part of the independence. Nature succumbed to us. The worlds become fragrant. At the very depth of nature is a growing demand for holiness and purity, for spiritual delicacy and purification of life. We are all drawing closer to nature, which is also drawing near to us. The nature is the chametz. All of a sudden the chametz wishes to be sanctified, to be uplifted. It's being defeated by us. It demands match our demands, which are noble because they stem from holiness. The unspirit that is imprinted on the land, its language, its freedom, its honor, its literature, its strength, possessions, feelings overflow through nature, which is at its very heart imbued with holy fire. This is exactly what we saw before in the machloket between the Purshim, Mesim rabbis, and the Baitosim. Whether these values can be part of the Torah in the land of Israel. Our physical demand is great. We We need a healthy body. Through our intense preoccupation with spirituality, we forgot the holiness of the body. We neglected our physical strength. We forgot that we have holy flesh, no less than holy spirits. All of our tshuva will succeed only if it will be along with its spiritual splendor. Also physical tshuva, which produces healthy blood, healthy flesh, firm mighty bodies, and a flaming spirit spreading over powerful muscles. This is the Torah of the land of Israel. This is what the Beit Hoshim could not realize. This is the transition between Pesach and Shavuot. And as I said at the beginning, it's not random that the Chagim are happening between Pesach and Shavuot. It's the same transition. The Torah that can uplift everything. The Torah that looks for the future of the nation, because we live not just as individuals, not just as communities, rather as a nation. But there's one thing which I wish to add to this picture. Maybe complete the picture. There's a Gemara in Maseret Brachot, source number 11. Gemara says two statements. Amar Ula, Nekitinan en uchlusu b'Bavel, says Ula, there cannot be a crowd, a public, a tzibur in Babel, in Babylon. And Tana, en uchlusu p'ruta mishishim rabo, mishishim ribo. There cannot be a crowd, a public, a tzibur, which is less than the number of shishim ribo, which is 600,000 people. Says the Gemara, in order to become a nation, rather than a community, you need to have two conditions. A is the place, is the location. The only location where we can form a nation can be the land of Israel. In Chutz Laaretz we can have plenty of thriving communities in Israel. It's the only place where we can have a nation. A. B, Shishim Ribo, 600,000 people. That's a minimal number. In the year 1948, in the land of Israel, we had exactly 600,000 people. That's the time in history when we switched from a state of scattered community to a state of a nation. This is the significance of Yom HaTzmaut. It's a new stage in history. It's not just a state, it's not just independence. It's a different way of holiness. It bringing us closer to the Jewish dream. What Jewish life are truly all about. This was the machloket between the Beit Hoshim and Purim, community versus nation, state. And maybe one more small thing. There's an amazing Sfat Emet, which appears in source number 12. Since our time is up, I will not read it inside, I'll just say it by heart. Sfat Emet wrote this in the year Tafresh Memalek, which is exactly 121 years ago. Says the Sfat Emet, we have three festivals from the Torah: Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Each festival from the Torah gave us the strength and the power to create a chag from the Torah Shebe'al Peh. And each chag, each festival from the Torah Shebe'al Peh is a reflection of a chag from the Torah. You can see it inside, everything I'm saying appears in the source. And says the Sfat Emet, Chanukah is a reflection of Sukkot. Sukkot is 8 days. Chag, Chanukah is 8 days. If you remember the Shita of Beit Shammai, it's against Pareh Chag, like the bulls, the sacrifices of Sukkot. There are many connections between Pesach and Sukkot. By the way, in that year of Chanukah, they could not celebrate Sukkot, so it was also kind of a compensation for Sukkot. Purim, says Sfat Emet, is a reflection of Shavuot. From Shavuot we accepted the Torah. If you remember the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, Daf Peichet, there was also reacceptance of the Torah on Purim. Hadur kiblo bimei Achashverosh, we reaccepted the Torah in the days of Achashverosh. Kimu v'kiblu ha-yehudim sounds like na'aseh v'nishma, to do and then to hear. Kimu v'kiblu, and then says a sfat emet. This sentence I wish to read inside. So number 12 in the end. Last sentence. Umichag ha-pesach, written 121 years ago. Umichag ha-pesach. Mekavim anu liot od. כמו שנאמר, כי מצאתך מארץ מצרים הרינו נפלאות. Says the שפת אמת. We have our original Independence Day. That's Pesach. Now we need the third chag from the Torah Shabbat Pe that will complete the series of chagim. We need Am Yisrael to create a third chag from the Torah Shabbat Pe that will be a reflection of Pesach. The new Independence Chag. This is our holy Yom Ha'atzmaut that the Sfat Emet has envisioned. And maybe the first day, the Yom Ha'atzmaut is a reflection of the first day of Pesach, the beginning of the process of the redemption. And Yom Yerushalayim maybe is a reflection of Shvi Shel Pesach, Kriyat Yam Suf, and it's final, there's no way back. It's a state, it's a fact, it's given. This is the holiness. Maybe this is our task. To bring the holiness to these days of Yom HaTzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, to thank Hashem with bracha on the Hallel, on the great tremendous miracle that we have in our times. This is a chag that we were longing for 2,000 years. And we have a merit in our times to celebrate the chag. This chag is cheshbon nefesh, about our future. What is our future? Where is our future? Because the future of us, of our community, cannot be disconnected from the future of the state of Israel. This is the uniqueness of our times. I wish to conclude with a short story. Exactly 8 years ago, I was here in Shlichut as the Rav of Bnei Akiva. We went to March of the Living with a delegation from Bnei Akiva. It was my first time in Poland. And we traveled during the week. We went to all the camps, Auschwitz, Birkenau, Treblinka. And I was very frustrated, because I was expecting that once I'll see all these horrible places, I will start shedding tears and cry. But it didn't hit me. It was too much like a museum. It was very difficult to feel what really happened there. It wasn't tangible. Till Shabbat came. We spent Shabbat in Krakow, one of the only cities that the Germans did not destroy the Jewish quarter, because they wanted to leave some reminder to the Jewish people. And during Shabbat day, we had a tour in the Jewish quarter to see the different shuls. And we entered one of the old shuls. There was an exhibition. On one side of the wall, there were pictures before the war. The other side presented pictures from after the war. Of the same places, but on one wall you see thriving lives, on the second wall you see death and horrifying pictures. And that's the time when I started shedding tears and crying. Not just because of what I saw, but because the story all of a sudden came up. The story that I've heard as a child. The story about a guy named Itzik, lived in a village, Blonia, near Warsaw. This is a young married man, two children, boy and a girl. He was very passionate, a very extreme way, about Palestine, about Israel. It was in the 1920s in Poland. He always preached to everyone that the future is in Israel. There's no future here. The only place where Jewish people have a future is in Israel. was again way before we had anything in that land. Few cities, but that's it. And then one Shabbat came to town very chashuv rabbi who did some fundraising for a place that's supposed to be the center for the Jewish future. Central Yeshiva in Poland, supposed to be world yeshiva. Probably you know what I'm talking about, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. It was Rav Meir Shapiro. And this guy Itzik was really upset. And he told him in front of everyone, there's no point of investing money here. You should send your money to Israel. That's what he told him. People excommunicated him. They thought he's a meshuga. And he decided to take his firstborn son to move to Israel. And he sent the 1920s, and he sent a telegram to his wife, telling her, "Listen, I'm here in Israel. If you wish, come and join me. Otherwise, I'll send you a get." And eventually, she joined him with her daughter, and they were the only survivors from this village, from Blonia. And this guy, Itzik, is my great grandfather. And thanks to him, I was standing there. He had a vision about the future for the Jewish people. It's only in Israel. This is the uniqueness of our time. Our future is in Israel. This is supposed to be part of our cheshbon nefesh, in planning our life, the future of our children. One major component is supposed to be Israel. This is the uniqueness of our times. It is challenging, but this is the future. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for the zchut of being here. Again, I wish to thank Rabbi Saif and the Koren family for organizing everything. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much. Chag Sameach.
Take a 5-minute break. There are refreshments outside. We'll reconvene at 10:35 for the next year. Just two questions privately, just because we're...